Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, welcome back to another episode of the Madhouse Podcast. As always, I am your host, Mad Max. Today's episode is part one in our four-part series as we celebrate 40 years of WrestleMania. WWE just released their 2K24 series in the video game, the 40 years of WrestleMania, and I thought I had an idea to do something like that similar as we are. I want to say we are about almost exactly 44 weeks away from WrestleMania, so I decided to break it up into four episodes. This week's episode, we're talking about WrestleMania's 1 through 10, 1985 to 1995. And then next week's episode, we'll cover WrestleMania's 11 through 20, which is 1996 to 2006. Yeah, 11 through 20. And then the week before WrestleMania, we'll cover WrestleMania's 21 through 30. And then the week of WrestleMania, WrestleMania weekend, I'll probably drop the final episode, which will only cover maybe, I want to say just the first couple, because I know we've covered the last two WrestleManias on this channel before. So I'm not going to cover the ones we've already covered, but we will be covering the ones that came prior to that. And then, of course, that weekend we'll also cover WrestleMania 40 live from Philadelphia. So the episode today we're going to cover is WrestleManias 1 through 10. And WrestleMania 1 is a glorious day in all of infamy as far as sports entertainment is concerned. 1985, the Rock and Wrestling Connection, and they got together, Madison Square Garden, and, you know, the big names were there, whether it was Mr. T, Cyndi Lauper, Muhammad Ali, Liberace, and all that stuff. And then it came down to the main event, which was a tag team match in which it was Hulk Hogan and Mr. T taking on Rowdy Roddy Piper and Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff. WrestleMania 1 was okay. It's the inaugural one. Usually the first one, you're not going to know what to expect and things like that. But there was a lot of stuff going into that. There was a lot of stuff going into that behind the scenes because of this whole thing with the Rock and Wrestling Connection that they did with the great Cyndi Lauper and everything like that, and all this other stuff was kind of going on. And, you know, Hulk Hogan and Mr. T hosted Saturday Night Live. All the events that were kind of coming into play for WWE at the time, you know, Vince McMahon putting it all on this one event, and it really set up the foundation for what was to become, you know, WrestleMania and things like that. And it paid off in such a big way. It was actually on closed circuit, which a lot of you kids who are under the age of, you know, possibly 30 may not even know what that is. I didn't even know what it was for a long time. I heard a lot of people say it, but, you know, they actually had it broadcast in a couple of movie theaters in the New York area and things like that. And you know, this was a big step. This was a big step moving forward for the WWE and for the world of pro wrestling and sports entertainment. And who would have thought that this would lead to, you know, the biggest extravaganza that the world has ever seen in the world of sports entertainment and wrestling and things like that. But with the success of WrestleMania 1 comes, you know, the repeat. Like, how are we going to top what we just did? Like, how are we going to get better? How are we going to do this again? You know, all the uncertainties, and, you know, where can we go from here? Where can we go that is going to be something bigger, you know, bigger, better, you know, and everything like that? WrestleMania 2 was going to answer all those questions, because I think it's the first and only time, I think, ever that WrestleMania was live from three different venues at one time. It was a three-hour show. They had 1 hour in New York, 1 hour in Chicago, 1 hour in Los Angeles. And I think every major city had a main event. Like, in New York, the main event was, a over-the-top rope battle royal in which Andre the Giant won that. No, The main event in New York was a boxing match between Roddy Piper and Mr. T, which I thought was phenomenal. It was entertaining to say the least, and things like that. And then the main event in Chicago was the Over the Top Battle Royal, which featured a lot of stars of the WWE at the time, like Andre the Giant, who ended up winning it. But it also featured a couple of guys from the world of professional football. William the Refrigerator Perry from the Chicago Bears was in it. There's a couple other guys in it as well, but I don't think really any of those guys held a candle to the refrigerator, to say the least, and things like that. And then, of course, the main event of the whole thing was in Los Angeles as Hulk Hogan defended the WWE Championship against King Kong Bundy inside of a steel cage. And to kind of have a show like that is really, it truly is groundbreaking. In a lot of ways, that was something that was different. That was something that hadn't been done before, and I don't think it's ever been done since. You know, because of the advancement in, you know, satellite and cable TV and all this other stuff, you know, you're able to broadcast it all over the world. But to hold a live event like that from, you know, three different venues the way they did, that truly is groundbreaking. You know, 1986 was no joke, and things like that. And it really kind of goes to show you that, you know, that they really were, when I say they, the WWE really had it mapped out to where this was going to be something special. They were swinging for the fences with every single iteration of WrestleMania. And to be honest, it only got bigger because as we get to 1987, WrestleMania 3, it emanated from the Pontiac Silverdome in Pontiac, Michigan, and things like that. And, you know, a lot of people remember that as that's truly when the WWE became the pioneer or the groundbreaking sports entertainment conglomerate that it is known today, and things like that. Because that show, they wanted to go into the biggest possible venue that they could, and I believe they were able to do it in a way that was so groundbreaking. So if you're gonna have 93,000 people in one arena, you might as well book the best card. And of course, the biggest card, the biggest match going into that was Hulk Hogan was going to defend the WWE Championship against the eighth wonder of the world, Andre the Giant. And that was such an iconic moment for both of those guys, not just for Hogan, because, you know, that truly did make Hulk Hogan a star in this company, and he was going to be the head guy moving forward. But it was such a great moment for Andre. You know, Andre had been a world-renowned professional wrestler, you know, in the 60s and 70s. And, you know, even though this was kind of the beginning of the end for Andre the Giant at the time, because, you know, he did eventually start slowing down as the years would progress and everything like that, it was a great send-off. You know, Andre the Giant had his moment in the limelight, and it was time to pass the torch on to the next, you know, up-and-comer. And that up-and-comer happened to be Hulk Hogan. A lot of people remember WrestleMania 3 for that, but a lot of people also remember WrestleMania 3 for the incredible Intercontinental Championship match between the Macho Man Randy Savage and Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. You had two guys who were perfectionists in the ring. I think an underrated guy as far as pro wrestlers are concerned, as far as, you know, baby faces are concerned. Ricky the Dragon was such a likable guy that, you know, he could do no wrong. You know, a lot of people say he looked like Bruce Lee, just bigger. And that is true. And then you got a guy like Randy Savage, who at the time was relatively new. He hadn't really been the big star that he eventually became. You know, that would come the following year. But, you know, Savage was on his way. But the one thing they did know about Savage was Savage could go in the ring. And this was a fantastic match. You know, this was a match that, you know, a lot of people still talk about to this day. It was something that had not been done. I don't want to say it hadn't been done before, but this was the first time that the New York office, because WWE at the time in the 80s was all about the big muscular guys doing the phenomenal feats of strength and things like that. You never really saw an in-ring match unless you were watching another promotion, whether it's Memphis, whether it was the NWA, or whether it was something else, to say the least. You never really saw that on the biggest stage. You know, a lot of people consider the WWE to be wrestling's biggest stage, and at that time it was. So this was something very, very out of the ordinary, and very, very out of left field. The fact that these guys went in and had a classic, because you're looking at a prime physical conditioning for both Ricky and Randy, and you know, and this was just the tip of the iceberg for a guy like, for both of these guys actually, because Ricky would go on to, you know, have an incredible rivalry or continue his great rivalry with Ric Flair. Randy Savage would become the world champion, you know, a following year later and things like that. And this was something special. WrestleMania 3 was something that a lot of people were just, a lot of people, you know, who were there or who were alive at the time who enjoyed it are never going to forget. That was their moment. And, you know, it truly was for the fans of it and everything like that. 1988, WrestleMania 4 was a little bit different. It emulated from Atlantic City in New Jersey at the Trump Plaza. Donald Trump was the guest of honor that night. And the build-up going into that match, going into that event, the event that sold, the event that was there, because it was a big gamble and because it was a big type of, you know, it was something different. The story going into WrestleMania 4 was that Hulk Hogan had just lost the WWE Championship to Andre the Giant. It was supposed to be the epic rematch on one of the TV shows that they had. And Andre won because of some wonky officiating, and then he surrendered the title to the Million Dollar Man. It's an infamous angle where the referee Dave Hebner looks identical to another referee, but in reality it's just the senior referee Earl Hebner, who hadn't been a star yet. So this whole idea that, you know, Hogan lost the title because of wonky officiating, can't do that, and then Andre surrendering the title to the Million Dollar Man, can't do that either. So they decided that the entire night, WrestleMania 4 would feature a tournament, a single elimination tournament, which featured like, I want to say it was like either 8 or 16, I want to say like 8 guys. It was 8 guys in the tournament, and the winner of the tournament would be the undisputed WWE champion. And that tournament had the plethora of the most popular guys in the WWE at the time. Hulk Hogan, Randy Savage, the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase, Ravishing Rick Rude, the Macho Man Randy Savage, the One Man Gang, Don Morocco, you know, a lot of the guys who were in the company at the time, just going strong and things like that. So it really was something that was kind of all over the place. It was different, you know. It was something that that WWE, like I said, WWE had never done something like that before. It had never taken place. But I think because of the fact that it takes place from Trump Plaza, you know, that's like a casino. You can gamble your way. It's the unpredictability of what's about to happen. And so the tournament comes down to the final two guys, which surprisingly becomes Ted DiBiase and the Macho Man Randy Savage. And that really, really was kind of that was really, really something that WWE really didn't, that was like thinking outside the box, because a lot of people had Hulk Hogan winning it back and things like that. But Hogan gets disqualified and Andre gets disqualified, and so now this one-on-one match, but I think what made this match really something special was how tough they made Randy Savage look in this moment. You know, he had, it was Randy Savage had to, like, I think it, because he went through the first three rounds, the preliminary round, the quarterfinals, the semifinals, and then the final round, he had, you know, he was the one that went through, to whereas Ted DiBiase, he only had one match because of the double disqualification from Hogan and Andre, he waltzed right into the final round with no opponent and things like that. So that was kind of something special, and, you know, it was really, really cool how they made, you know, Macho Man strong, and then he comes across with the win, and, you know, our new WWE champion now is Macho Man Randy Savage, and it was such a cool moment for Randy. And then the irony in this is that the next year, WrestleMania 5, 1989, they go back to Trump Plaza again, and it's this, I think this is the only time that I can recall that WrestleMania went back-to-back venues, Trump Plaza, Atlantic City in New Jersey. And the main event that year, the story going into that was the Macho Man versus Hulk Hogan, the mega powers explode. Because we've taken the two biggest baby faces at the time and made them a tag team, we're going to split them apart. And I think going into WrestleMania 5, the idea that these two guys were going to fight over a woman was interesting because it played a little bit in real life and things like that. So that was kind of cool to see. And, you know, the Macho Man plays a great bad guy in a lot of ways. But, of course, a lot of guys play good bad guys when the good guy is Hulk Hogan. And, you know, this was the only time that the crowd was a little bit split. Even though it was a good guy versus bad guy storyline, the crowd did seem split between the Macho Man and Hulk Hogan going into that match. And then Hogan would eventually win. And that was really special for WrestleMania at the time because, you know, back-to-back venues, sell out again. And then, of course, we have two great moments. Macho Man, you know, going the distance, winning the gauntlet, becoming the new champion, and then Hulk Hogan overcoming that at WrestleMania 5. WrestleMania 6, 1990, it was the first time that WrestleMania would go international because that one took place in the Toronto Sky Dome. And Canada was something different. You know, they had been popular in Canada, but you never would have thought they were going to host an event like that. And, you know, to kind of say the least and things like that. So this was going to be something special to say the least because, you know, it's WrestleMania and everything like that. But going into WrestleMania 6, it was the ultimate challenge. It was the ultimate opportunity, and it was the ultimate good guy versus this bad versus. It wasn't a good guy versus. It was a good guy versus good guy. And we had never seen that before. You know, it was Hulk Hogan defending the WWE Championship against the Ultimate Warrior, who also was defending his Intercontinental Championship. And that was something that we had not seen before or since. We've seen champion versus champion before. You know, they had done that in the 80s and things like that, but they had never done it on a big scale like this, especially with two guys, the magnetism of a Hulk Hogan and a Ultimate Warrior, because the Ultimate Warrior was the new guy on the block. You know, he was really gaining momentum as this new babyface in the WWE, to whereas Hulk Hogan was still considered to be the number one guy in the WWE at that time. So their story came about during that year's Royal Rumble. The Royal Rumble had kind of been a thing. It wasn't the big, you know, it wasn't the road to WrestleMania like it is now. You know what I mean? Like, the winner of the Royal Rumble didn't get the championship match if they won and things like that. Because at the time, back in the late 80s, early 90s, when they first started doing the Royal Rumble, the champion would be in it. And it wasn't until, I think, the following year that they started using that whoever won the Royal Rumble would face the world champion at WrestleMania. But WrestleMania 6 didn't happen like that. It was something different, to say the least. But because the one iconic moment that everybody remembers from that year's Royal Rumble was the face-off between Hogan and the Warrior. And that was something that, you know, a lot of people remember to this day. It's a great moment. It is a great moment, to say the least, because of the fact that, you know, like I said, Warrior was the new guy on the block. Warrior was the new baby face that they were kind of doing with the WWE. And then Hogan was in there, and, you know, Hogan was just Hogan is still established as the top guy and things like that. And it was really something special to see both of these guys in the ring at the same time. Was something that really, really was going to make the people go crazy. Like, and they did. And they really did. They really, really nailed the idea that two baby face, if done correctly, two baby faces can main event WrestleMania. And going into this match, That was the hype, and you could tell. And the fun fact was the fun fact for that year's WrestleMania was that Edge, the WWE Hall of Famer, the big time guy that he eventually would become, was actually in the audience, and he got to see his hero, Hulk Hogan, take on the Ultimate Warrior and things like that. And this match went back and forth, and this was something that a lot of people didn't really see, didn't really expect to happen, so to speak, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? Like, you didn't know who was gonna win. You didn't know if Hulk Hogan was gonna overcome the odds like he always does, or if he was gonna do something that was gonna blow people away, or was the Warrior gonna be the one to, to be the one to dethrone Hulk Hogan. And then when that moment hit, Hogan misses the leg drop, and he ends up getting the big splash. Oh, okay, side note here. The Ultimate Warrior, in my opinion, has the worst finishing move of all time. It's just me. I don't mean to, to degrade the guy and everything like that, and talk bad about him or anything like that. But in my opinion, his move, it's because it's so anticlimactic when he does it. You know what I mean? Like, it's the gorilla press, and then it's the big splash on the back. You know what I mean? Like, this was something that it just looked really, really out of place, man. It didn't look like impactful like Hulk Hogan's leg drop. But anyway, so Warrior wins the title, and he unifies the Intercontinental title with the WWE title and things like that. And I can go on and on about the whole thing with Hulk Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior. But if you guys have watched my Dark Side of the Ring, Dark Side of the Ring episodes, you know what happens after that. Hogan and Warrior have a pretty good match, and everybody kind of goes home happy. And a lot of people thought that this was going to be the start. This was going to be the start of something new, for the WWE. And unfortunately, it wasn't, because 1991 rolls around and we go to WrestleMania 7, and it goes back to Hulk Hogan being on top, and Ultimate Warrior we kind of never really see again in the main event picture. So going into WrestleMania 7, the main event was Sergeant Slaughter defending the WWE Championship against Hulk Hogan. This WrestleMania 7 took place in LA. It was supposed to take place at the LA Coliseum, the big arena, and everything like that, where the Raiders were playing and the LA Rams and stuff like that. It was gonna be the first time that they were gonna do like an outdoor stadium, because they'd never done an outdoor stadium like that before. And it would have been pretty cool, but because of the storyline that was going on between Hogan and Slaughter, it got too real, and security became a big thing because of what was going on in the Middle East at the time. A lot of stuff was changing, and the WWE felt it was gonna, they were gonna, because of the seeming threat that Sergeant Slaughter proposes. That, a lot of people thought this whole terrorist thing was gonna just, be a security issue, and it really was. So because they couldn't get the security that they wanted for the LA Coliseum, they ended up going to the LA Sports Arena, which it went from being like a 90 to 100,000 people now to like a mere maybe 20,000, which is a big deficit, so to speak. They still had great moments at WrestleMania and things like that, because I think WrestleMania 7 was the debut of The Undertaker, and Undertaker versus Jimmy Superfly Snuka. And then, of course, leading up to the main event was the same thing, because of the fact that, this storyline that they've created with Sergeant Slaughter being an Iraqi sympathizer going up against the real American Hulk Hogan and things like that. It was something special. It was something, not something special, but it was something special as a wrestling fan. But it was something that created a lot of uncertainty, and it made a lot of people uncomfortable who were non-wrestling fans. So that's why WrestleMania 7 just kind of felt like a WrestleMania, and things like that. But Hogan comes away with a win. He comes away all bloodied and battered with the WWE Championship, waves the flag, and you had your typical storybook ending that WWE had done. Going into WrestleMania 8 in 1992, it was at the Hoosier Dome in Indianapolis, and that was the first time they started introducing like double main events. They had other matches going on at the time. So going into that match in particular, the main event that night was Ric Flair, Nature Boy Ric Flair, defending the WWE Championship against the Macho Man Randy Savage. Now, in 1991, that year's Royal Rumble, they didn't have a WWE champion. The WWE champion was, it was originally supposed to be, Hogan was out with an in, the story was he was out with an injury, but I think in reality he was filming a movie. And so he wasn't scheduled to come back until WrestleMania. So they needed something for him to do. So they had decided that the winner of the Royal Rumble, the winner of the Royal Rumble, no, that's not true either. The winner of the Royal Rumble would be the new WWE champion. For some reason, Hogan wasn't the champion, but Hogan was in the Royal Rumble that year because he's eliminated by Psycho Sid or Sid Justice, whatever you want to call him. And then he pulls Sid out, and then Flair's the last one standing, and Flair wins the Royal Rumble. And then Flair cuts that infamous promo where he says, with a tear in my eye, this is the greatest moment in my life. And, even though Flair was a well-known wrestler at that time, because, if you know anything about Ric Flair, he was one of the most popular wrestlers that was not in WWE during the 80s and 90s and things like that. So when he jumped ship and came to the WWE and becomes the WWE champion, that was something special because he hadn't seen that before. So he was going into WrestleMania as the champion. So he was going into WrestleMania as the champion, and then he was going up against Randy Savage. They had made the big announcement that who was going to be it. I know the original plan was for Hogan and Flair to main event WrestleMania 8, which on paper it sounds good because you got arguably the biggest wrestler in the world in Hulk Hogan as far as sports entertainment goes. You got the biggest wrestler in the world as far as professional wrestling goes in Ric Flair. And you had all this time to kind of build towards, because both of these guys are, they're egotistical, they're entertaining, they're charismatic, they have a lot of stuff going on for them. And I think at that time, it would have worked. In 1992, I think it was, when WrestleMania 8 had occurred, but for some reason, WWE didn't pull the trigger. So they split the main event into two matches. It would be Ric Flair versus Randy Savage for the WWE Championship, and then Hogan would face Sid Justice. Hogan needed a big guy to face anyway, and Sid was incredible at the time. But Sid was another guy who was another guy from, at the time, it was still, they had just changed Jim Crockett Promotions to WCW, and some of the guys from the WCW had come to the WWE for brief runs. Hogan, not Hogan, it was Flair, Sid Vicious, or Psycho Sid, whatever you want to call him, and also Lex Luger. Lex Luger would come later. And those guys would have some pretty good runs in the WWE. And so the main event going into WrestleMania 8 was that you had a great match. You had a great match with Flair and Randy Savage, which in my opinion was a great kind of story because the story going into that was that the Macho Man's wife, Miss Elizabeth, was having this alleged affair with Flair, but it wasn't really happening yet. Flair was making the assumption that they did have this relationship and things like that, but in reality, it was just Flair trying to get into the mind of Savage to kind of throw him off his game and things like that. So it was something that a lot of people didn't see coming, and it kind of was it was the soap opera. You know what I mean? Like the soap opera on stage was going to be life imitating art, imitating everything else. And things like that. So that was the first time they kind of went into that whole, storytelling thing. Because the stuff with Hogan and Savage did feel kind of close to real life, but you didn't know it was real life until, you know, stuff was coming out about Hogan and Savage and things like that. But with Flair and with Flair and Savage, it felt kind of real because Flair plays a good bad guy and things like that. And it was a good match. Flair had a tremendous match. Flair proved that he could go with just about anybody. He had great chemistry with Randy Savage, to say the least, and things like that. And they had a pretty good match. Savage came away with the win, and once again, another run as the WWE champion. So, you know, you can't say anything bad about Ric Flair or Randy Savage, for that matter. But what a lot of people take away from WrestleMania 8, it was the return of the Ultimate Warrior. Because of the issues, I don't want to go into that anymore, because you know, if you saw Dark Side of the Ring, you know why, you know, the whole thing didn't work out with Warrior. But then they brought him back in 1992 for another run, and that was kind of how WWE ended the night, with the return of the Ultimate Warrior. And that was kind of cool. That was such an iconic moment for the WWE and for Savage and everything. I mean, not for Savage, but for Warrior. But it didn't really do anything to prolong his career. And Russell, you kind of had a lot of people call it like a so-so WrestleMania. Another match that the card for WrestleMania 8 was a little bit more stacked than usual. You had Undertaker versus Jake the Snake Roberts. You had Bret Hart versus Roddy Piper for the Intercontinental title, which was really cool, and things like that. Shawn Michaels versus Tito Santana, this was not Shawn Michaels' breakout moment, but this was the first time you started seeing Shawn Michaels become the showstopper that he eventually would become, and things like that. So that was kind of cool. WrestleMania 9 was, 1993, and it was 1993, and it was the first and only time that I can remember that they had the match in, it was at Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas. It was an outside venue and things like that. So, you know, it looked kind of cool. It had that whole Roman Coliseum look and things like that. And that one was kind of a little bit more memorable, but a lot of people think that a lot of people remember it for the wrong reasons and things like that. So going into that year's WrestleMania, the main event was Bret Hart defending the WWE Championship against the winner of the Royal Rumble, who at that time was Yokozuna. And, you know, it was supposed to be this real kind of crowning moment for Yoko and everything like that. And it didn't turn out that way, for some reason or another. I don't know why. I don't know the story behind it, but for some reason or another, because of this, the rumor is, and I say that with air quotations and things like that, the rumor was Bret Hart was the new guy in charge, because guys like Hogan and Savage and Flair were getting older, because at that time Flair had left the company between WrestleMania 8 and 9. He had left the WWE and went back to WCW. Hogan would follow suit, as would Randy Savage and Roddy Piper. A lot of guys were jumping ship. You know, they didn't understand why. So WWE kind of needed to restock the shelves, and they saw this kid by the name of Bret the Hitman Hart kind of be the next generation of what they were trying to do. And it worked to an extent. They put the strap on him and everything like that. So going into WrestleMania 9, he was going up against this monster heel that they had by the name of Yokozuna. And Yoko had just debuted like maybe about a year earlier. You know, he hadn't been there that long, but, you know, he was getting some steam as the bad guy. So they had him win the Royal Rumble in 1992, and that was the first time that the winner of the Royal Rumble would go on to WrestleMania and face the champion. And so that was the main event, and they had a pretty good match. Like, you could totally tell that that Yoko was a gifted wrestler. You don't see a whole lot of big guys winning, you know, who could move like that. You know what I mean? Like, big guys, super heavyweights like that. This guy was, you know, 500 plus pounds and things like that, and could move like a ballerina. But he's part of that Inoue family. You know what I mean? Like The Rock and Roman Reigns and the Samoans and the Head Shrinkers and Rikishi and all those guys. He comes from that family as well. It kind of comes naturally to them and things like that. So you know, for him to move as great as he did and to get high praise that he got from Bret Hart, who's, you know, the excellence of execution, you know, that's saying something. But the ending of the match, Yoko wins the match, well, not cleanly, he wins in a heel way, and he becomes the champion. Hulk Hogan comes out, and they restart the match. Hulk Hogan comes out, they don't restart the match, they give Hogan a match, and Hogan beats Yoko. Hogan beats Yokozuna like in like less than 10, 15 seconds and things like that. And then Hogan drops the leg, 1, 2, 3. Now Hogan's the WWE champion. And you know, that kind of did rub people the wrong way in a lot. You know, and like there's this documentary on Peacock called The Story Behind WrestleMania. And they kind of go, they vaguely go over it. You know, they said they know. I think Howard Finkel or somebody else had made the comment that even though, yes, it did kind of rub people the wrong way, it's the shock value that you don't see it coming. And, you know, WrestleMania is full of those moments. And it's like, it's true, but, you know, I don't, that's still kind of, that kind of just, you know, you're just dumping a shitload of crap on Bret Hart and for no reason too. You know what I mean? Like, you don't get that a lot. You know, Bret Hart was supposed to be the future of the company, and Hogan was, you know, they wanted to move on from Hogan, especially as they're going into the 90s, but Hogan didn't want to leave. So, 1990, yeah, here we are at 1994 now, and 1994, WrestleMania 10, you know, we're back in Madison Square Garden, and WrestleMania 10, it was a double main event, because Yoko's still the champion. Now, Yoko won the title back from Hogan, I think it was at SummerSlam, and he's keeping the title going into WrestleMania 10. And at that year's Royal Rumble, it was a split. And I think this is another thing that they've only done one time. Usually when two guys go over the top rope, they get back in the ring and they restart the match. They did it with John Cena and Batista. They did it with, I think they did it with the girls. I want to say, no, I don't think they've ever done anything like that with the ladies. But anyway, at that year's Royal Rumble, Bret Hart and Lex Luger both go over the top rope. So rather than it being a split decision or, you know, going into overtime or restarting the match, they said both men win. So both guys are going to fight Yokozuna at WrestleMania. So the opening match for WrestleMania 10 was Lex Luger versus Yokozuna, in which Yoko wins. And everything like that. And then Bret Hart also has to do double duty, because he's also in a match with his younger brother, Owen Hart. And so Bret does that match, and Owen wins that match, which was really cool. And that was a cool little story going into that whole thing. And then the main event that night was Yoko and Bret, and with Roddy Piper as the special guest referee and things like that. And Bret Hart was able to avenge what happened to him the following year, or the previous year, at WrestleMania 9 and going into WrestleMania 10. So that was kind of cool. But I tell you all that, but what everybody remembers about WrestleMania 10 was the ladder match for the Intercontinental Championship, Shawn Michaels versus Razor Ramon. Now, if you don't know the story, that going into WrestleMania 10, Shawn Michaels was the original Intercontinental Champion, but because of an injury, he was sidelined. Now, that's not really true. He was out because he had flunked the drug test, so he was gone for 6 weeks. So during his absence, they came and had an over-the-top rope battle royal to crown a new Intercontinental Champion, and that champion was Razor Ramon. But just when Razor Ramon was starting to get some headway as the new Intercontinental Champion, Shawn Michaels makes his return with the same belt. So to make it official, they're going to have a match at WrestleMania 10 to find out who's the undisputed Intercontinental Champion. And for the first time ever, we have a ladder match to determine who's going to be the undisputed Intercontinental Champion. And that was by far the coolest match at the time, because like I said, this is the early 90s. We hadn't seen anything like that before. You know, we hadn't seen anything like that before. You know, I wasn't watching wrestling at the time, but, you know, I've seen that match, you know, later, and just to think, man, this is really cool. This is something that's going to be talked about for years to come, and to be honest, it's still talked about now. You know, it's not until shit, WrestleMania 16, like 6 years later, that we got another ladder match at WrestleMania, and you know, and it was something different. It's the only time that I can remember that it's the second time in the 10 years of in that first 10 years of WrestleMania where the Intercontinental Championship match outshines the world title match, you know, because everybody remembers Ricky Steamboat and Randy Savage, you know, at WrestleMania 3 over the world championship between Hogan and Andre. WrestleMania 10 was the same thing. They had two WWF championship matches at WrestleMania 10, but nobody remembers those two because all they were talking about is the ladder match between Shawn and Razor. And, you know, that's such an iconic moment for both of those guys. I think, I don't remember ever hearing Scott Hall talk about it, you know, and things like that. But, you know, I know Shawn Michaels has said that it was an idea that he had in the event of, because he knew he had flunked the drug test, and he was like, when I come back, it's going to be WrestleMania, you know, how about this? And, you know, it was an idea that he had kind of had, like, if he can have a match with Razor, that would be cool. But it was the WWE's idea to make it a ladder match. So, but yeah, man, that to this day, that's one of the coolest ladder matches I think I've seen in a long time. And because it has the staying power. You don't see matches like that ever like that, especially at that time in the early 90s. So Shawn and Razor tearing it up, WrestleMania 10, Madison Square Garden. It was really cool. It was really cool. And I think this marked the end of a lot. Because remember how I said earlier that a lot of guys were jumping ship to WWE. To WCW. This was the last time we saw Randy Savage in the WWE. It was the last time we saw Lex Luger in the WWE. And things like that. Those guys would jump to WCW either that year or the following year. Piper would still be around for a little bit, but then he would also jump ship to WCW. So there was that. But yeah, man, WrestleMania 1 through 10 was really interesting. You know, it was something different. It was something, it was kind of what the standard was, especially the golden age of the 80s. And then into this new generation in the early 90s of the WWE, you saw the climate change. You saw the guys of the 80s, the Hogan, Warrior, Savage, you know, and all those guys. And you saw this plethora of new guys kind of come in and filter in the early 90s, like Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels and Razor Ramon. And we're going to get to more of those guys in the next episode. But WrestleMania 1 through 10, that was a good little setup. That decade right there was cool because it signified the change. The first half saw what made the WWE great in the 80s. And then the second half, you know, 5 through 10, saw the filtering of the new talent that was to become the top stars of the early and mid 90s. And, you know, that's the power of WrestleMania. You know, you're going to have your biggest stars or your biggest rising stars, you know, in the moment at that time and things like that. And they're going to do the best that they can with what they got on the biggest stage. And, you know, by all means, they did deliver. So, you know, that's going to be our stopping point for today. We'll start with WrestleMania 11 in the next episode and next week's episode. That's going to go ahead and do it for today's episode. And if you like the episode, be sure to follow the podcast on all podcast outlets, whether it's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Pandora, Google Play, Odyssey, Reddit, wherever you're getting your podcast from. Be sure to follow the podcast on all social media outlets, Instagram and X, the Madhouse 21. What did you guys think about WrestleMania? What is your favorite WrestleMania moment between WrestleManias 1 and 10? Whatever the case may be, let me know. Instagram and X, the Madhouse 21. Be on the lookout for more episodes as they come out. Like I said, next week's episode, we're going to be talking about it'll be part two in our 40 years of WrestleMania, where we talk about WrestleManias 11 through WrestleMania 20. And then, of course, we got our movies and TV shows that are dropping this week and everything like that. And just be on the lookout for that. Be on the lookout for anything and everything that comes out of this podcast. We got a lot of things coming out scheduled for this week, as well as we got stuff coming out in the movie theaters next weekend. So be on the lookout for that. Be on the lookout for anything and everything that comes out of this podcast. And of course, as always, be sure to embrace your inner madness.